Welcome to the American Med Spa Podcast, Medical Spa Insider. This week, founder Alex Tiersch was joined by Sheila Nazarian, plastic surgeon and founder of the Skin Spot Beverly Hills.
So this is very exciting for me. I'm coming, not live, but mostly live for me. It's live for me and for you, not live for everybody else, from Beverly Hills. And we're here with the lovely and talented Sheila Nazarian. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I really appreciate this. This must be really exciting for you to be sitting here with me.
It is.
Because I'm kind of a big deal. You know.
Love it.
We've got, you know, one of us is very famous and the other one is you. So, Dr. Sheila Nazarian, I should say, you are, whether you want to believe it or not, one of the kind of biggest stars in this industry. And I'm just kind of curious, like what does it feel like? Like what's going on in your world right now? Did you see yourself being in this position 5 years ago or what's kind of the genesis of the brand Sheila Nazarian?
Oh my God, that is such a crazy question. Cause I feel like I really haven't taken time to pause and reminisce and look back on how this all happened. I think when I came out, I definitely wanted to sort of advocate for myself. Yeah. I think that women have a tough time doing that, especially Middle Eastern women who have just been told to sort of be quiet, do as you're told, be that good girl. And for me, honestly, becoming a surgeon was kind of a rebellion. You know, nobody really as you know,
why is that?
I think that, you know, everybody told me don't do it. Like, who's gonna marry you?
So I do actually want to get to that because that's a fascinating statement that you just said. But like, yeah. But before we even get there, what like you've come so far. We've met. I think we were just talking about this four years ago, roughly. Mm-hmm. And I think back then you only had like maybe 100,000 followers.
No, it was less than that. It was probably like 20.
You were just like a pittance, really, just a blip on the radar. And now you've kind of blown up into this big thing. And do you ever just kind of look back and say, wow, I cannot believe where I am?
I do. But at the same time, like I have such high goals for myself that like my goal was to have, you know, 1 million followers by the end of this year. And, you know, my other goals were to have like 10,000 on my other sites, on my other, you know, so some of those goals have been met. And then because of the algorithm, I really slowed down with Instagram. But now we're picking it back up. So I just feel like I've sort of fallen short. I remember I was watching an interview when I was like in the fourth grade of Madonna, and she was saying that, you know, 99 people might say her concert was great and one person might complain about something. And the only comment she would remember is the complaint. And that's kind of, I really relate to that. Yep. So I feel like I'm always pushing myself more than anybody else is even pushing me. And I'm never really like, you know, I look at it and I'm so thankful and I'm so grateful, but I'm just not done yet. So I'm not complacent about it. I'm always just trying to keep growing and moving. At the same time, I definitely ask myself, you know, where do I stop? Like
where do you stop?
I don't. I don't even know if I'd like to stop, but at the same time, you want to work smart. You don't want to just work a lot.
Right.
So it's sort of like, you know,
do you have an end goal? Like I want to take over North America, like the Klingons.
No, like I don't even think of it that way. I just sort of want to deliver great care and, you know, grow the practice, grow my influence. I definitely want to eventually be on TV, whether it's, you know, reality TV or a host of a talk
show. Why haven't you been on reality TV yet? You seem like a natural. I mean, you have a little bit, but
no,
like,
I mean, I've done, you know, other people's shows, but you know, we're always working on it. You know, I did a year long thing last year, which didn't end up coming to fruition, which was kind of disappointing, but we're working on another project for, you know, a reality TV show. We're working on another hosting show. Just the opportunity presented itself with some of the producers I'd worked with in the past.
Yeah.
So
you'll get there.
One of them is sort of daytime. The other one's prime time. So hopefully eventually it'll happen. I just feel like it has to be the right fit.
Yeah. So do you still, and I'm not insinuating anything. I'm just merely curious. Mm-hmm. You've got so much going on. Do you still enjoy coming in and practicing medicine? And
no, actually, what with everything going on is what makes me really excited to come to work. if I was just stuck in my office, you know, operating all day or seeing patients all day and everybody telling me how amazing I am, you know, oh, doctor,
you're amazing.
You know, that would like be so boring to me. So I feel like with the constant needs of the practice and always trying to just up our game. And, you know, last week we had spa water out front. This week we're going to have Nespresso and mint tea, you know, like, and biscotti.
Love
so it's like,
so
it's like always trying to just up the game. And that's really creative to me and really exciting to me. And yes, I love when my patients are happy. I love changing their lives, giving them confidence, all of that stuff. But I'm not gonna, you know, walk around being like, I'm the best plastic surgeon that ever walked the face of the earth, because there's like 9 plastic surgeons on my floor and they're all awesome.
That's crazy.
You know, but you have to find a way to differentiate yourself. I mean, there's 31 plastic surgeons in my building. Building. So, you know, it's just, you can't say, well, what I'm offering is so different from what they're offering. I mean, you have to sort of learn how to differentiate yourself in I don't know, a very authentic, relatable way so that people feel comfortable.
Well, and one thing I actually do prepare for these things a little bit. People don't even know how much time I spend, but I was flying out here. I was going through a bunch of some of my notes. And one thing that I've always noticed about you, and this is like amazing given where you are, you're this kind of larger than life figure to a lot of people because you're on Instagram, you're on TV. I've always known you for a long time, but you've seemed stayed pretty grounded. You're always very much yourself. I mean, you're fabulous, of course, don't get me wrong. But like, do you ever find that difficult to do? I mean, this stuff kind of gets to some people's head. In this business.
You know, what has happened is I don't take BS anymore, and I'm not afraid to fire people. I'm not afraid to tell people, you know, what they could be doing better. And I think that sort of changed about me, which I'm so glad, because you know, it's a business, it's an experience for our patients, it's a safety thing. And so as a female, I think it's very difficult. You feel bad for people. You're like, well, they're the, you know, they have kids, and like, what happens if I fire them? But if it doesn't make sense for the business, and it, you know, you have to let them go and find their happiness because clearly they're not happy here, or else they'd be performing better. But no, I think, you know, my kids keep me grounded for sure. I always tell all my residents too, you know, if I start acting like a douchebag, please let me know.
You're totally acting like a douchebag right now.
Thank you,
Sheila,
for letting me know. But no, I mean, I think it's, you know, I think it's good to be, and the patients see that too. Like literally I'll walk in the room and I'll be like, hey, how are you? And they'll be like, wow, you're so nice. I'm like, I just said hi.
Well, you've got like you've got the persona, like the model surgeon, right? And you're in these fabulous locations with these gowns on and stuff, and you're doing your thing. And then, but really, when I've always talked to you, you've always seemed kind of normal.
Yeah. Everybody's normal. I feel like everybody's normal and everybody's outstanding to different people, you know? Like you might have dated some girl that you thought was totally normal, and then she marries some dude that she thinks she's just outstanding.
Yeah.
So I think we're all normal and outstanding. It's just who's looking.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
So what do you enjoy most about this industry, medical aesthetics? I mean, it's such a crazy and different industry.
Yeah.
I've been in it for now 10 years and it's changed so much. People don't know this, but you're relatively new.
No,
right?
Yeah.
You haven't been around for like as long as some of these other doctors.
No.
What draws you to it?
I think sort of staying cutting edge is really fun. I get a lot of the newest products coming in just because of my social influence. They bring it to me first to try it, and if I like it, help them grow and grow awareness about the product. So I think just staying cutting edge is kind of fun and cool. I think doing the TV stuff, you know, my conference, meeting new people, making those connections is really cool. And honestly, my patients are like the best. I swear. Like, I think it's because of like what I put out on social media.
Yeah.
I just get like super normal, nice, reasonable people.
Which is huge.
Which is huge. Like, it literally, my case this morning, the anesthesiologist is like, why are your patients like so normal and nice? Because I think that's what you put out.
Yeah.
So that's sort of what you draw in.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get any crazy, narcissistic, unreasonable people. And if they come in, they probably wouldn't like me anyway. And we wouldn't schedule. So everybody who makes it to the finish line is kind of super normal and looking for natural results, not looking for anything crazy.
Yep.
And they're happy.
Yep. Naturals. Trust me. this did not come on its own. So I'm really curious. We've talked about this a little bit kind of just in passing, but you've got a very interesting background. I doubt that if you were like looking at little baby Sheila Nazarian back when you were 2 years old, you could transpose yourself to where you are right now. Like, did you ever envision when you were a kid, this is what you'd be doing?
I knew that I wanted to work with my hands. I used to do like
fun. You could have been a juggler.
I know. No, I mean, I used to take like duct tape and paper bags and make a suitcase for myself. And that's what I would travel with. And so my mom used to call me in Farsi, it's متخصص کارهای بیخودی, which literally translates into an expert in useless things. So I used to do all these like stupid things.
Breast dog.
Yeah. Just joking. But honestly, like all of those measuring for the suitcase and like doing all that stuff really is like very applicable to my job now. So when I did wood shop in the fourth grade, I thought I wanted to be an architect because I love like making the blueprint and then actually creating like a shelf and then sanding it down and staining it and doing all that stuff. But then an architect, you know, doesn't really get to build. They just design. So I sort of nixed that. And then I said, you know what? My dad was a doctor and I was always into like science and surgery. So I said, you know what? I'll be an orthopedic surgeon because that's nails and hammers and very wood shoppy. So then I started shadowing a orthopedic surgeon and I was super bored. It was very cookie cutter. Like literally they put a plate and cut around it. Like there's no like guesstimating. There's
it's
nothing.
It's really easy. Yeah. Trust me. I know.
It wasn't creative at all. So, then I knew this guy and I was talking to him about it. He was an ophthalmology resident at USC and he said, well, you know, why don't you go talk to Dr. Gross, who became my mentor eventually, and shadow him and see if you like plastic surgery. Cause it sounds like you want to be creative. And that's what I did. And that's sort of how I figured out that's what I want to do.
Now, wait, where did you grow up, though?
I mean, I was born in New York as an anchor baby in 1979 when the, you know, the revolution happened in Iran.
Yeah.
But I was born in New York and then we flew back and then the revolution happened. And
you flew back to Iran.
Yeah.
And then the revolution happened.
Right.
So you
and
came
then
back.
We were, no, well, we were stuck. So when you're Jewish, they didn't really like us, or there was just, you know, microaggressions and some, you know, blatant discrimination. And so they wouldn't actually let us leave the country.
Really?
And so my dad was a physician. He said he was going to a conference and he sort of flew out to Austria and waited for us. And then they took all of our passports away. So they're like, yeah, you can go to your conference, but your wife and your daughter's passports, like we need to hold on
so
to
this
those.
This was you, your mom, and then
my sister.
Your sister.
So he left and waited for us. And then we escaped through the desert in 1985 to Pakistan.
So you were 6 years old?
I was 6 years old.
And you escaped from where? Iran,
from Tehran to Pakistan. Through we were in the back of a corn truck. And so they put us on the bottom and then they put corn on top of us. And they basically were like driving like corn out.
That makes everything make sense now. Really? Do you have memories of that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
That must have been.
Yeah, it was hot. It was hot.
That's the thing you remember, that it was hot.
It was hot. And there was like a spike that they used to tie, you know, rope around to hold the corn down. And that was like going into my rib. So I remember that.
So were there any like close calls?
Yeah. So when we were in the desert, they actually saw us and they started chasing us and shooting at us. And our lights were off going through at night through the desert. So then once, you know, we were sort of, they caught onto us, our driver just like switched on the lights of the car and just sped through the desert. And then there was a ravine. So two wheels were on one side of the ravine and two wheels were on the other. And we went over it. And then the border police were like, okay, we're not going to take that risk. So we got away. But we were basically in the back of a Toyota pickup truck sitting on our luggage.
For how long did that journey take?
2 days. And then I remember
it's crazy.
You know, and then as soon as we crossed the border into Pakistan, we made a little pit stop. It was like a clay square shack with a hole in the ground, which is the bathroom. And so we were in this bathroom. My mom was holding me above this hole in the ground because I was too big for me to straddle. And so I was going to the bathroom and she told me, you know, we're going to America. And I was like, oh my God, we're going to see Michael Jackson. So that was, you know, when she told me, because she didn't tell me before that because she didn't want me to give it away that we were leaving.
Yes. Yeah.
And then from there, we were in Pakistan for a few months waiting for visas. Uh-huh. And then once we got the visas, we went to Vienna to see my dad. And then from there, we flew to the U.S.
And then where'd you end up? Was it New York?
We were in New York for a minute, but just because my mom's family was there, some of my dad's family too. And then I think, you know, the other half of the family was in LA. So we're like, you know what, let's just go to LA. And that's
That is Sounds just like what happened to me when I was six. Running around the alleys of Evanston, Illinois.
Looking to open or improve your medical aesthetic practice or medical spa? Look no further than AmSpa's Medical Spa and Aesthetic Boot Camps, which are intense two-day training seminars covering legal and business best practices in the medical spa industry. Both physicians and non-physicians alike will gain the tools to open and or run an efficient, profitable, and legally compliant medical spa or aesthetic practice. And in 2018, AmSpa is hosting several throughout the United States, including Boston, Massachusetts on September 15th and 16th, and Nashville, Tennessee on October 15th and 16th. To get more information or to register, log on to AmericanMedSpa.org or call 312-981-0993. Early bird registration for the Medical Spa Show is open until September 1st on MedicalSpaShow.com. Register now and save $75 for the only show that is by medical spas for medical spas.
It's difficult for young girls to kind of get into medicine, and that people were discouraging you. Who was discouraging you? What was that about?
You know, I think, okay, so for example, I was in college, I was at Columbia, and I was back here in LA, and there was a Shabbat dinner, and my aunt took me with her, because my mom had passed away by then, so my aunt sort of was like, when we were in LA, they were like, come, we'll take you, you know, out.
Yeah.
So we went to Shabbat dinner at one of her friend's houses, and there was, you know, about 50 people there, and she's like, oh, this is my niece, Sheila, and she wants to be a plastic surgeon, and everybody was like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then this one woman was like, why would you do that? As soon as you have kids, you're going to have to quit anyway. So just stuff like that. Or for example, when I became a plastic surgeon, this was not too long ago. It was like a year ago. We were at a kid's birthday party, and one of the older ladies there was like, if you're a surgeon and your husband's a surgeon, who cooks? And I was like, we just starve.
No, we don't.
So you just it's just, I think it's what they were told. It's like, how can you work and leave your kids at home? You can't do that. So they just sort of propagate that.
Yeah.
Moving forward. I mean, I think it's gotten a lot better. I would say the generation now, you know, they're... You know, I know an orthopedic surgeon that's graduating. Another female plastic surgeon graduated from UCLA. You know, so I mean, it's just like, I think it's getting better, but it's really hard. I mean, they're not married. They don't have kids. I think the only reason why now my community asks me to speak and says you're such a role model for our daughters is because I didn't just become a plastic surgeon. They don't respect that. They respect it if you became a plastic surgeon, got married, and had kids. So it's,
and then remained a plastic surgeon.
Yeah. So it's not, if you gave up family and a husband for your career, like there's no respect in that in my culture.
Really? So did you ever get back to Iran? Have you ever been back?
No. So I wouldn't risk it.
You wouldn't?
No. Unless there's like a regime change, I wouldn't go. Yeah.
That's nuts. Wow.
Yeah.
So when you were growing up, you said you wanted to be an architect and then maybe, but was there ever a moment where you realized, okay, I want to be in medicine? Like, when did that happen for you?
I think it was like dissecting a frog. You know, I was
totally.
Like, this, but I used to faint at the sight of blood. Like, I used to faint monthly. My mom had to carry like honey in her bag.
Really?
Yeah. I used to faint all the time. So everybody was like, I was like the weak child.
Chopping people's noses off and stuff.
And then I just sort of got used to it. But I'll tell you, when I was a medical student, I had to lay down on the floor all the time.
Yeah. So you do get used to that eventually.
Yeah.
You
totally must, get used to it. Yeah.
Right. So then the next question. So obviously you got into plastic surgery. Again, it's only been 4 or 5 years since you've been board certified.
Yep.
And when did you decide that you wanted to like be more than just a plastic surgeon, be like your own brand, be famous, for lack of a better
word? Actually, it's funny. Like, I want to say I really didn't know, but I remember as a fifth year resident at USC, one of my chief residents asked me like, what's your ultimate goal? And I said, it's to have enough influence to be able to fundraise.
Okay.
Because I knew I was going to become a plastic surgeon, right? So you like, that was, you know, that tunnel was nearing to an end, to completion. So I was just like, you know what? I just want to have influence.
So to fundraise just in general or something specific?
Yeah. Like, you know, like Operation Smile was always like, you know, kind of near and dear. But to be able to not just perform the procedures, because I think you're limited, right? How many of those can I do in a day? Five.
Right.
But if I have influence and I can sell tickets for a fundraiser, then that can affect hundreds of lives at the same time.
Okay.
So it was kind of like, you know, just being able to affect and touch more lives than one breast dog at a time. Because they can go to anybody for a breast dog, right? And who am I to say my breast dogs are that much better than the guy down the hall?
I love mine. I know. Mine are perfect.
But I feel like, you know, I have another talent that other people may not have. Yeah. And that's being comfortable.
So I get that. But, yeah. And I, that's obviously laudable. But at some point, mm-hmm. a lot of people want to have influence. Mm-hmm. But it takes a certain type of personality mm-hmm. to want to put yourself out there, right? And to take that step where you're going to take the chances to put yourself on camera, open yourself up. Mm-hmm. And did you always like take pictures of yourself when you were a kid?
Or, no. Oh my God. I was such a nerd. I did want to be a model secretly. Yeah. Cause I was like super skinny, but I had like braces and like totally wasn't that, no, never. Yeah. I mean, I did a little bit in college.
Yeah.
I did some runway in college and then I did like, yeah.
That's cool.
Just like, you know, local designers and stuff like that. But no, it was kind of like a dream. And I don't know. I just thought it was fun. But then once I actually started doing a little bit of it, I was like, oh my God, this is so boring. I don't know. I just thought it was something like glamorous and fun to do. You know, what little girls like sign up for these classes. But no, I definitely have always been open, you know, almost like to a fault. So when I was like a resident, for example, even if one of the attendings did something that was shady that I thought wasn't right, like I would talk to somebody about it. I wouldn't just sit there and be like, oh, I have to be that quiet girl and take it. No, it's like, you know, our chairman needs to be aware. Poor guy.
Yeah, that's the one thing looking back. I first met you at the ASAP's resident symposium way back when. And that was one of the first things I remember was like, there was no, you don't really have a filter.
I have a filter. I just don't think that girls should be quiet, you know, but I definitely have a filter. Like, no, I know when to not be rude, but I also understand when somebody's not up to date and not with the times.
Okay.
And we're in a room full of young people with older people trying to tell them how to market.
Yep.
And if that's out of touch and not really based in reality, I'm going to say something.
Well, and
plus I went to business school too. So again, maybe some of the other people in the room had too on top of their medical training, but maybe I had done it a little bit sooner.
Well, and talk about, because I've experienced that I've not experienced it myself, but I've talked to some of these older guard, that's what I kind of call them, the old guard plastic surgeons.
Right.
And I've seen you go through it and I've seen other doctors go through it.
Yeah.
Talk about some of the blowback and the pushback you're getting from some of the older, I don't want to use the word stodgier, but that's, you know, just they're more traditional. Like there's like a battle going on right now almost, although it's not really.
It shouldn't be a battle, right? I mean, the way that I like to look at it is that we are educating the public and the battle isn't between older plastic surgeons and younger plastic surgeons. It's core versus non-core.
Right.
That's, I mean, right? Because remember that paper that came out that said the hashtag plastic surgery was like 71% of the time used by non-plastic surgeons? It was like used by hairdressers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So
yep.
just the fact that now that statistic has been flipped and now plastic surgeons are actually hashtagging. So there's a lot of misinformation out there and I think it's our duty. Not that I'm mad at people who are non-core, you know, trying to make an income for their family. I'm not mad at that.
Right.
But don't claim to be trained. Say what you are, be honest about it, and, you know, stand to be corrected if you're giving misinformation. So I think really we have to not create a vacuum.
Yeah.
And so when these older plastic surgeons say we shouldn't be on social media, we shouldn't be advertising. Well, if we don't, somebody's going to fill that vacuum and that's not okay.
Well, and I actually see there's really two things there. One is definitely the core versus the non-core, which is kind of an issue that we've been dealing with.
Right.
For a while, and I'd love to get your opinion on that. But the other thing is the younger surgeons like yourself who are out there on social media, who are live streaming surgeries, where everything is out in the open. That makes a lot of people in the older crowd who are surgeons uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But I think you're absolutely right. Because if you don't do that, you're going to be left behind.
And it's not just that, like patients want to know that now. Yes. They don't want there to be this veil of secrecy.
Yeah.
They want to know what's going to happen to their bodies. And I totally understand why older surgeons would say, oh, it's kind of an invasion of this sacred space.
Yep.
But it's all about education. And the patients want to know what's going to happen to them. It's not enough for you to say, well, I'm going to wave my magic wand. And when you come out, I'm going to go, ta-da, and you're going to see what I did. They want to be involved in the process. They want to know what's going to happen to their bodies. And so I think if people just think of it less about marketing and think of it more about, this is what patients want to be educated on. This is what they want to know before they sign up to have something done to them.
Right. It's education, you know? Right? That's all
it's education. If, so if you think about it, and yes, it does increase your bottom line, because if you're a good educator, but if you're a good educator, people are going to want to come to you because they understand what you're saying. They feel like they connect to you. They feel like, okay, this person's not going to hide anything from me. The other thing too, is a lot of stuff is Photoshopped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hired a photographer and he said, he was doing some, just on the side work for me, doing some before and afters. And he had worked with, and continues to work with a lot of plastic surgeons in Beverly Hills. And then he's like, well, I think we just need to touch this part up. I'm like, wait, what? Like, we don't do that. And he's like, you're the only person that I've worked with that said they don't touch up their photos.
Really?
So I think that's why, again, live surgery is very important, because patients know you can't, you're not touching up a live surgery. They do it.
That is misrepresentative.
It is. But I think, patients understand that too, with, they're touching themselves up all the time with Facetune and all this stuff. So they understand that. But when you're doing it live, that doesn't lie.
Did you have a large following back when you were like in medical school?
No, I had no following.
So when did you start doing that? Do you remember when you started saying, I want to build my social media following?
Yeah. So, I think it was, right after I graduated. So like 5 years ago.
Okay. So you became.
I was just on Facebook, honestly, and I didn't understand Instagram at all. I was like, why would anyone want to be on Instagram when there's Facebook?
Right.
And then, a couple years after I graduated,
did you build a big following on Facebook though?
I mean, I had probably 2,500 people or something like that. It wasn't huge.
Shit, we have that many ourselves.
I know. but one of my staff members was like, no, you have to be on Instagram. And I was like, all right, we'll do this. And then, slowly I started really liking it.
Mm-hmm.
And then once Facebook kind of became a pay to play situation, I really just went full force.
So what is it? There's a lot of people who are going to be listening who want to build their following.
Yeah.
What can you attribute like one to two things that allowed you to build from 2,500 to what are you at, a million now?
No, I wish. Oh 100,000? My God. No, it's 170,000, something like that.
Oh, that's nothing. Yeah.
I know. I wish it was more. Sorry, guys. I think people talk a lot about the why, there's all these like YouTube videos on your why. I really think it's more important at this point is how. So how are you going to differentiate yourself? Like, what makes you different than the 31 other plastic surgeons in your building?
Mm-hmm.
We all went into medicine because we want to help people. We all went in because, it's the best job ever. But how you do it and how you differentiate yourself, I think are more important. It's a more important question.
So what's different about Dr. Sheila Nazarian?
I mean, again, the realness, I think the authenticity comes through.
Because a lot of people try to do that on social media and it just doesn't fly as well,
Because maybe that's not their truth. Maybe they're trying to portray something that really isn't them. Or maybe they hate social media and somebody's like forcing them to do it.
Right.
You know, there's this one chef who, one of our speakers at our last meeting put up on a slideshow that never posts a picture of himself, but he just posts pictures of recipes and the food he makes. And he has like hundreds of thousands of followers because that's true to him. Like he doesn't want to be that person that wants to be in front of the camera.
Yeah.
For me, I think I'm pretty different. I'm young, I'm female, I'm brown. I can dance hip hop. I can rap.
Wait a minute, do it. Right now.
I will. It'll be a post soon. I promise. I've been meaning to post this.
You can rap?
No. Like
you like rap.
Do a hip hop dance.
Okay.
But I just think there's a lot more layers to me than just medicine, and I just why would I post before and after photos when they're going to look like every other before and after photo everybody else is posting?
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're important on your website just to say this is my aesthetic.
Yeah.
But I think what really differentiates me is me.
Yep.
And that took a minute to come to. Like, it's so funny. My husband used to tell me when I was in medical school that as soon as I met someone, within 5 minutes, they would know I was becoming a plastic surgeon because my douchey self-confidence at that point was based on me becoming a plastic surgeon. I spent 80 hours a week in the hospital, so that was my identity.
That's all you knew.
And when I was a chief resident, one of the female plastic surgeons at Kaiser committed suicide because she got in a car accident or something and she couldn't operate anymore and she had nothing to live with, so she killed herself. And that totally could have been me. Mm-hmm. You know, and I realized like, oh my God, I need help. Like, so I started going to a therapist like for 3 months, one day a week, 9 p.m. because he would stay for me because that's when I would get out of the hospital. Mm-hmm. And he really helped me understand that, you know, I'm my core values. That's who I am. It's not being a plastic surgeon. If I couldn't mm-hmm. operate, I still have so many other gifts and so many other things to be thankful for.
Yeah.
And sort of helped me get out of that state. So that's sort of where I look at my Instagram now. You know, it's not about being a plastic surgeon. There's tons of those over here. Right. I mean, it's about being an accomplished woman, an educated woman, you know, a hardworking woman.
Right.
But it's also about being a mom, having fun with fashion, mm-hmm. you know, building a business, marketing, all of those other things that bring joy to my...
I'm a huge fan of M-Spa.
Yeah. Just all the other things that bring joy to your life and yeah. not focusing on just, I'm a plastic surgeon.
That's super easy for you because you kind of have this authenticity. And again, I said you didn't have a filter, but you are very open.
Yeah.
Like you just... talked right now about going to therapy. Like most people, a lot of people don't even want to do that.
Yeah. I think it's a luxury. I wish I could still go. I just don't have time.
But you're doing it right now. This is what this is.
Except you're the one on the couch.
If someone's talking to you and say, hey, okay, I want to find my authenticity. I would like want to build my brand on social media. I hear what you're saying. Like, how do you go about even doing that? Because it's easy for you because you've done it, but not everybody has that same
level. It's not easy.
Of...
I mean, I pay a lot of attention to it. Like sitting on my desk right now, literally every day I mark down what's happening on social media, which influencer came in and posted, what my numbers look like the next day after they did that. I mean, you know what I mean? So I am like putting a lot of time and effort into this. It's not just like easy. It's a lot of work. It's a whole other job.
And the influencers I've talked to, it is a lot of work.
Oh, it's a lot of work. I mean, it's fun. I like it. You know, but it's a lot of work. It's not just like, oh, I did it and it happened one day. You know, it's constantly working. And it's also changing. So your audience changes.
Yep.
So I always say, you know, when I had like 2,000 followers, all people wanted to see was pictures of my kids because it was mostly my friends and family following me.
Right.
When I got to 10,000, all they wanted to see was surgical stuff because, you know, who was I? But, you know, I can show surgeries and nobody was really doing that back then.
Right. Right.
But now, literally on my big account, if I post a before and after, anything having to do with a device or advertising for a device, I will lose 400 followers from that one post. Yeah.
Just because people don't want to see it.
No, that's not what they want to see. They want to be motivated. They want to be inspired. Mm-hmm. They want to see pretty pictures. That's what they want to see. Mm-hmm. And so it evolves and you have to pay attention to what's getting the most engagement, what's getting the most comments, what's touching people, what's connecting with people.
Yeah.
And that's something I study every day.
So I wish we had more time. I know you have to go here soon. But tell me what you're up to with the skin spot and skincare, mm-hmm. because I know that's... Tell me about that and what's going on with that.
So in November, we started a membership, kind of Costco mm-hmm. model for an online e-commerce site called theskinspot.com. And what I did is I sort of looked at all the other e-commerce sites and there's so many products. Like, how do you know mm-hmm. which one's good for you? Mm-hmm. If I put you on a site and ask 200 sunscreens, which one are you going to pick? Like, you have no idea. You're going to like throw a dart.
Yep.
So what I did is I kind of combined the Zappos, you know, website and the Costco model. And what I did is, you know, we started a membership. So it's like $169 a year and you get 40% off and free mm-hmm. shipping on everything on the site. Plus everything on the site is curated by me, tried by me and my staff. And a video is made on each product. So I can literally say, oh, this sunscreen's tinted, but if you're darker than me, it's going to look too chalky on you. Don't mm-hmm. buy it. Mm-hmm. This one's better for you.
Mm-hmm.
And creating regimens for acne or, you know, just so people feel a little bit more empowered that somebody's done the legwork to put amazing products on there and then differentiate them with videos to really help that person pick the right product.
Is it only an online platform or do you have like a brick and mortar store?
No. I mean, we have, you know, we sell skincare products in my office too, but we have a lot more skincare products on the website. And the reason for that, we used to have all of those skincare products here, but mm-hmm. what I and I knew everything that differentiated them, but I found that my staff was kind of getting paralyzed.
Yep.
They were like, I don't know which vitamin C is better. I don't know which sunscreen's better. And so they wouldn't recommend anything.
Right.
So what we sort of decided was, you know what, I'm going to pare it down to the products that, you know, people keep coming back for
mm-hmm.
that I want them to be like, you know what, it's not a wrong answer. Getting them off of Rite Aid
Yep.
And getting them onto biopsy proven products is never wrong. So just pick one from this category based on if they want tinted or non-tinted, if they're oily or dry, whatever it is.
Right.
That's great. Pick an antioxidant from this category. If they're oily, pick this one. If they're dry, pick this one.
Simplify
great.
It.
Next. Yeah. And that way they feel comfortable actually recommending product, because I always make this analogy. It's like going to the dentist. Like, imagine you went to the dentist twice a year for your deep cleaning and you didn't brush your teeth at home. So if they come here and they're getting lasers and microneedling and all this stuff done, and they're not using the right skincare products at home, it's not going to work.
It's not going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're protecting your investment almost.
And actually helping us along, like help me help you.
Right. And so the Skin Spot is live.
Yeah. It's been live since November. We actually moved all of our shipping out of the office and into a distribution center about 4 months ago. We're shipping out about 100 boxes a week. So it's doing really well.
That's awesome.
But I mean, I'm still growing that too. So we just have to get the word out and educate people on one product literally can save you your entire membership fee. One product, because in the medical space, they're more expensive.
Yeah. That's a huge missed opportunity for a lot of people in this industry.
Right.
They don't, because the dental analogy, I think is great. So, real quick, I always ask people this.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the people who listen to this are either opening a business or they're open, usually in aesthetics. What if you could give one piece of advice to someone who's getting ready to open, say, a med spa, whether it's a core doctor or a non-core doctor?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say it's a non-core doctor, right?
Mm-hmm.
What would that be?
I think it's keeping overhead low to start. That is like so key.
Yeah.
You know, if I learned...
To start.
Yeah. Like if I learned one thing coming out of business school is to keep lean for as long as you can.
Yeah.
Only hire when you absolutely need to. Only expand when you absolutely need to. That doesn't mean like don't have... You know, there's so many cute things at Target now, you know, for decorating your office.
Yeah.
You don't need to have custom furniture made the day you open your doors. You want to be profitable and slowly build up. And the people that I've seen that are really successful... on the med spa side that aren't physicians did just that. Like they were literally in the back of a mini mall, not even facing the street. And then slowly they moved to the front of the mini mall and actually converted a movie theater into their spa.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't start that way.
Yeah.
Unless you have just like huge investors and you have great experience and you're bringing on MBAs and...
But most people aren't going to start
that way. Most people aren't
that
doing
way,
that. Right? So I think it's really have a vision, have an aesthetic, get great training.
Yes.
But stay lean.
Yeah.
Oh, and the other thing that I think is super important is know how to do everything yourself first. So like, for example...
Like you're talking about like software, stuff like that.
Yeah, like
everything.
Programming your... Yeah, like whatever it is. Like for me, I always give the example of the autoclave. You should know how to sterilize your equipment. Because if one day that person who does that doesn't show up, what are you going to do? Yeah. Cancel all your surgeries? No. You need to know how to run your autoclave and then you can... You know, what happened too is I had four people leave a few months ago to go to med school, PA school, you know, move to with their boyfriend up to a different state, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I had to take 2 weeks off to learn how to do everything myself again.
Yes.
Like my EMR, programming my EMR, making those email templates that go out. And I found so many things that were off.
Yeah.
So we're the other thing too is like however you show yourself on the internet needs to be reflected in your staff and in your office space when people walk in. So for example, I'm the model surgeon and I'm in all these gowns. And when they walk in, they see my staff in sneakers or Uggs.
Right.
Like there's discord there. No, everybody needs to have a
the
certain dress code.
Match the brick.
Exactly. Click matches the brick. I love that.
Actually, I think I got to give a shout out to Tim Sawyer, Crystal Clear for that. He's the one who told me that. So enough about you. Let's talk about me.
Okay.
No, actually, we're really out of time. I know you have to go, but really appreciate your time. And this, I mean, it's you're hopefully going to be speaking at Medical Spa Show in February, Aria Hotel. It's going to be off the chain.
I love it.
We're going to have
looking forward
a social media section, which I would love to have you say a few words on. Obviously.
Sure,
so
of course.
We'll be releasing more about that, and then check out the Skin Spot, skinspot.com.
Theskinspot.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
All right.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks for joining us this week with the American Med Spa Podcast, Medical Spa Insider. This week, Alex Tiersch was joined by Sheila Nazarian, plastic surgeon and founder of the Skin Spot Beverly Hills.